Spirit Podcast. On this date, December 24th, 2022, on the eve of Christmas Day. For those of you who are living in cold climates, especially here in North America, and in particular Canada, if you're out in the streets right now, please get to a nearby shelter or somewhere warm, because things are pretty chilly out there. Okay, before I start the show, I want to address some of the concerns about last week. I think it was last week's podcast or the last podcast that I did prior to this one. A lot of people were telling me about the sound quality issues. When I actually went back to listen to it, the sound quality was pretty poor. So I've hopefully fixed it. If not, I'm going to have to delete this podcast, but hopefully I won't. Anyways, welcome everybody. I'm glad you can make it tonight's podcast. And something that, again, I came across a few friends talking about this, and then, of course, I've seen it on TikTok. And it's something, again, one of many things that they're rolling out. And when I say they, I mean the politicians and their puppet masters. It's another way to kind of segregate people. And what I'm going to talk about tonight is the 15-minute cities. Now, before I start any of the articles, I wanted to first play this video. Now, the video itself is, it makes it sound like this whole idea of a 15-minute city is utopic. And by the way, the first experiment, the first city to do this 15-minute city is the city of Oxford in England. So I'm going to play the video for you guys.
Oxford City Council has taken the climate crisis extremely seriously. So we declared a climate emergency a couple of years ago. And since then, we've worked on lots of measures to reduce our carbon emissions. There's lots of commitment in this area. So the zero emission zone was first committed to in 2014. For a number of years, Oxford continued to see breaches of local air pollution levels, and we still see that today, unfortunately. So we have too high levels of air pollution in the city. We desperately need some intervention in this area. Zero emission zone is a charging scheme, essentially. The only vehicles that are fully zero emission will be allowed into the zone free of charge. Local businesses still need to receive deliveries, and they also need to send deliveries out. One of the projects that we are currently working on is helping businesses to make the switch to zero emission modes of transport. So in our historic covered market in the city centre, we're working with a range of local traders there to introduce electric cargo bikes. And the idea is that traders can use those bikes to make local deliveries and ensuring that those deliveries are fully zero emission.
Well, I think it's quite an exciting thing for Oxford, in the heart of Oxford where pollution is quite high. I think creating a zero emission zone is a real positive. Oxford City Council have been brilliant. I mean, we've been pushing at open doors all the way. It's just like a lot of things, when it finally happens, people will latch onto it when they realise they can't drive down that particular street. So it'll be a case of having to adapt.
The whole aim for the City Council to introduce this zone is to make sure that we have much cleaner air. And obviously the reason for clean air is to ensure that people are healthy and can enjoy our city environment, come and visit the city without having a risk of being ill from air pollution.
You know, it's all part of a process, really. Climate change is here, you know, we need to adapt quickly.
So anyways, there you have it. As I was telling you guys, they make it sound like it's utopic, that everything's going to be great and it's peaches and cream. Now, there's certain parts of that video that you guys aren't able to see, which basically there's like a penalty fine. So depending on the type of vehicle that you drive, you could pay a higher fee or a higher fine. Now, of course, we all know about fines. You know, 1 year they start off low, and then as the years progress, they get higher and higher. But in terms of the climate crisis, because a lot of people refer to this whole 50-minute city, well, the need for a 50-minute city is, of course, linked to climate crisis. And of course, you know, the elites are pushing this climate crisis thing very seriously. And if the fines start off small, eventually they're going to get so high that it could lead to incarceration. I mean, this is very, very possible, to be quite honest with you. So I'm going to move on to another article here. Actually, it's a website. It's called 15minutecity.com. I'll read the headline from it, which says, "Everyone living in a city should have access to essential urban services within a 15-minute walk or bike. The 15-Minute City Project is designed to help access focused urban transformations," key word here, and I'll explain in a second, "be what we need them to be, ambitious, inclusive, measurable, and effectively implemented." Now, when I hear the word transformation, it's often linked to money. So transformations basically meaning that you're going to have to transform the city to fit more of the, you know, the zero or net zero emissions plan. And of course, when you have a transformation, essentially you're going to be spending a lot of money and using up natural resources to do it. And there in itself is a huge oxymoron. I mean, you're supposed to fight something that you're trying to prevent, but at the same time, you're making it worse because you're causing even more pollution to try to get to net zero. A net zero plan. Now, the gentleman of this website, his name is Dan Lusher, I believe. He's an urbanist and longtime San Francisco resident who's got a passion for making cities work for everyone. Now, according to this website, it says that Dan is the guy that, or maybe Dan had a hand in it, but he's the inventor of the 15-minute city, which turns out not to be true. Now, Dan is a very, he does mention the word ambitious, and he really is ambitious, but I believe he's ambitious for the wrong reasons. Now, Dan's linked to other companies, which I will mention here. Now, this is, the company here is called Lassen Consulting, and this is their, I guess their title. "Strategic support to build strong, lean organizations that enable entrepreneurs to focus on creating real change." So again, transformations, entrepreneur equals corporations that want to make money. And of course, I'm mentioning this consulting firm because Dan is the CEO of this firm. So at the bottom of here, there is a list of companies that Dan has worked for. So it says Lassen Consulting principal. Lassen Consulting's principal is Dan Lusher, who has held executive roles at BCR, Water.org, ADAP Capital, and Equal Access International. I'm going to pull up two of these, BSR and Water.org. Now, this is BSR. I'm not sure what they do in particular, but I'm thinking that it's an NGO. It does say here BSR, which is a trademark, by the way, is a sustainable business network and consultancy focused on creating a world in which all people can thrive on a healthy planet. Now, there's a word consultants. But if you scroll here, And they always say, you know, if you want to find out the motive, you know, especially in a capitalist society, you should always follow the money. Now, at the bottom here, it says BSR works with these corporations. Now, I'm going to state the obvious ones, because the other ones I'm not too familiar with, but there's IBM, there's PayPal, there's Victoria's Secrets, and there's another big one, which is, I believe, Shell. So again, follow the money, right? Okay, let's go to the next. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because these 15-minute cities are being pushed by people that have a lot of influence and a lot of wealth, okay? So they're not doing it for the benefit of the planet or society, okay? Now, the second company that Dan has worked for is called water.org. He's worked for many companies, but I'm going to mention these two here. I believe water.org is about the preservation of water, and it's, I believe it's also an NGO, if I'm not mistaken. But more importantly, let me scroll down and let's see who they are partnered up with. So again, there are three major corporations here. The IKEA Foundation, everybody knows IKEA, the Swedish furniture store, Stella Artois, the beer company, and of course the Bank of America. Because every initiative or urban transformation starts with the loaning of money. So again, if you want to find the motives, you always follow the money. All right. I'm going to go to the next article here. And by the way, I just want to mention this, that the World Economic Forum has fully endorsed this. So again, another reason as to why people should be very suspicious of this. Now, this is a great article coming out of spikedonline.com. Check it out if you guys can. The title is The Madness of the 15-Minute City. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read bits and parts of it. The important parts that I believe should be read. So I'm not going to start from the beginning, but I'll start near the beginning anyways. But it says, to this end, Oxfordshire County Council, which is run by Labour, the Liberal Democrats, and the Green Party, wants to divide the city of Oxford into 6 15-minute districts. Now, I've highlighted this part because it's really important to talk about this. Now, I think I did mention in the beginning of the podcast segregation. Now, talk about segregation. And again, they're going to divide this into, like I mentioned before, Oxford is the first city to do this. They're going to divide the city up to 6 sections. It's something out of the Hunger Games, as far as I'm concerned. And there's going to be limits as to, in terms of traveling between each section. Again, it's going to start off utopic, but then, you know, the politicians and the multimillionaires are going to impose restrictions. And, you know, it's going to be even harder, let alone coming out of the country or coming out of the province or the state. It's going to get even harder to go from one city, part of the city, to the next. Okay, I mean, again, this is... It starts innocent, and you know the paths are paved with gold intentions, but then eventually it turns into a dystopia as far as I'm concerned. So I just wanted to mention that. Now, in these districts, it is said most household essentials will be accessible by a quarter of an hour walk or bike ride, and so residents will have no need for a car. On the surface, these 15-minute neighborhoods might sound pleasant and convenient, but there is a coercion or coercive edge. The council plans to cut car use and traffic congestion by placing strict rules on car journeys under the new proposals. If any of Oxford's 150,000 residents drives outside of their designated district more than 100 days a year, he or she could be fined £70. So again, it starts with 100 days, but then eventually it can go down to even one day. I mean, based on past experiences, for instance, the attacks of the Twin Towers 9/11. Remember the Patriot Acts 1 and 2, how they were supposed to keep people safe at the by compromising your rights and freedoms. And have you got any of those rights and freedoms back? Absolutely not. If anything, it's getting worse and worse. And I'm using that as an example because this could be applied here also. Okay, let me continue on here. Do not leave your allotted zone, at least most of the time. That is the policy. Or it could soon be after Oxfordshire County Council decides on the matter on the 29th of November. Although there's a public consultation that is still ongoing, the council is likely to overrule any objects from residents. Labour councillor Duncan Enright, cabinet member for travel and development strategy, has already declared the policy is going to happen definitely. So for those of you that have followed me over the years, you know, the many groups and pages that I've created on Facebook or other social media platforms, you know that I'm a big proponent for direct democracy. When I read this stuff, it really angers me, because a lot of people want to, especially in the States, a lot of people still say that they live in a democracy. I mean, those numbers have changed drastically, especially after the lockdowns, and people, a lot more people are starting to realize that no matter where they live, the political system has been compromised and has been corrupt for a long time. But again, the nerve of these guys, and now they just say it straight out. I mean, before they used to hide it. They used to pretend. It was like sort of like lip service. They would tell you that they were consulting you, or they would say, you know, we have consulted the public, but in closed doors, they've already made their decision as to what they want to do. And again, for those people that believe that this whole climate crisis is a hoax, well, again, your politicians and your political systems are not going to solve this. In fact, they're going to do the opposite, and they're going to enforce, and they're going to implement what their donors want them to implement. It's purely simple. It's not to say that our environment, to be honest, I don't even know if it's in crisis, but I do know that we are damaging it. But this is not the way to reverse those damages. For instance, the pollution of oceans, the cutting down of forests. In fact, I think by building more of these cities, or actually transforming some of the existing cities, which I think they're going to do, I think again they're going to probably cut down more natural resources, and they're going to mine more, which in turn was going to cause more pollution. So just this whole thing is just, you know, one hypocrisy after another. But then again, everything a politician does is one big hypocrisy. All right, let me continue on here. Now, the concept of the 15-minute city was born with C40, chaired today by London Mayor Sadiq Khan. Hopefully I pronounced that properly. C4 calls itself a network of mayors of nearly 100 worldwide cities collaborating to deliver the urgent action needed right now to confront the climate crisis. Central to the birth of the project was another former London mayor, Ken Livingstone. Livingstone was often explicit in his anti-car ideology. In 1999, shortly before becoming mayor, Livingstone famously remarked, "I hate cars, and if I ever get any powers again, I'd ban the lot." Now, here's my perspective about cars. Cars have their use, they have their purpose. I, for one, am not a big city driver. I don't like driving in the cities because of the traffic congestion. I don't think the cities were designed for cars, to be quite honest with you. But again, especially here in Toronto, we really don't have a good transit system. And if we did have a world-class transit system, then, you know, we wouldn't have to use a car. Okay, again, but a car has its purpose. To ban a car like just right out is really practical, because again, there's other things that a subway can't do, or a bus that can't do that a car can. So you can't necessarily rule out cars. Okay, they do have their time and place. Now, you know, these guys talk about climate crisis and net zero emissions and all this other stuff, all these buzzwords. You know, why don't we entertain new transportation ideas? You know, I've heard about this Hyperloop. I don't know if it's in the testing stages, but talk about a net zero vehicle or transportation, something that's gonna you know, have zero impact on the environment. I mean, are we entertaining these ideas or no? I mean, by the looks of it, that probably not. But again, we should entertain these ideas. For instance, the whole electric car, as far as I'm concerned, has been an absolute disaster. Because when you drive a electric car, around on the road and stuff like that, yeah, it doesn't create any emissions. I get that. But how about the amount of pollution that this car has caused? The building of the motors, the mining of the lithium, and so on and so on. And not only that, but when these batteries run out and they have to be replaced, they could be very costly. And not only that, these lithium batteries can never be recharged. They can never be used again. And again, to dispose of that is basically a environmental hazard. So, I mean, we have nitrogen. That is a great technology to use. We don't have to scrap the car that we have. We can just switch the fuel over from fossil fuel to nitrogen. But again, politicians don't want to talk about that because all the money is in the electric vehicle, which again can be monopolized by all the big car companies, especially Tesla. So it's not about the environment. I mean, a lot of people know that, but other people are just totally oblivious to it. It's not about the environment. It's about money. It's about control. All right, let me continue on. The big moment for the 15-minute city named in 2020 when the Socialist Party candidate for mayor of Paris, Anne Hidalgo, won re-election. Much of her campaign was based around the 15-minute concept. As Politico noted earlier this year, Hidalgo's pitch to turn the French capital into a city of proximity, where children walk to school and residents know their local baker, struck a chord at a time when COVID-19 lockdowns meant people were suddenly spending a lot more time in their own neighborhoods. Enthusiasm for the idea sparked similar campaigns in Dublin, Barcelona, Milan, and Lisbon. Now, don't we have that already? Like, I know there's a lot of helicopter moms, as they call them, or helicopter parents, where they need to drive their kids to school, even though they're less than a block away. They're in walking distance. But I remember growing up as a kid, I do remember that we used to walk to school, and if we didn't walk to school, we would just take the bus. So, I mean, all of this stuff is really not new, like, having stuff in close proximity. I know a lot of people live downtown because they don't want to drive. It's a choice that they've made, and they want to live in an area where everything is in actual close proximity. So this is really nothing new, but again, it's what they're pushing, which could have disastrous consequences down the road. All right, this is the next part of the article that I found very interesting. Just last month, C40 announced a partnership with United Nations Habitat, Carlos Moreno, and the Danish property investor NREP, which manages 7 million square meters of real estate across Denmark, Finland, Sweden, Norway, and Poland. Okay. United Nations Habitat, as far as I'm concerned, is a corporation, as far as I'm concerned. Okay, they support corporations, they support this capitalist system, and they support the billionaires who are basically pushing this agenda. Now, remember I was talking about Dan Scheffler, and he claimed he was the inventor of the 15-minute city. Well, that's not true. If you guys, I'm not going to get into him too much, but the actual inventor, the guy who came up with the concept, his name is Carlos Moreno. You guys can look him up, just type in Carlos Moreno, 15 Minute City. He's actually one of the creators of it. Now, what I found interesting, and again, going back to what Dan was saying on his 15minutecity.com website, he was talking about urban transformations. Well, here's where the corporations come into play, or developers. Again, this Danish property investor, NREP, is totally aboard with this because, again, it involves development. It involves money. Bank of America, that's where they come in. They have money to loan. They'll loan the money out to NREP, and then, of course, they'll charge the governments and the cities, and people will pay more taxes so that they can transform these cities from what they are currently over to a 15-minute city model, which, again, is going to cause more pollution to the environment. So it's just a total oxymoron. And it's actually moronic as far as I'm concerned. All right, let's continue on with the article. As usual, it is ordinary people will suffer the costs of the 15-minute city, particularly urban car owners and families who regularly drive across town to visit relatives or friends or to go to work. And we shouldn't forget the needs of older citizens, those with disabilities and children, as well as the women who so often look after them. Now, I understand what the writer is trying to say here. Not everything is going to be in close proximity. There are going to be certain, maybe medical clinics that might not be in your proximity, and you might have to drive to go see them. But under their penalty, under their fine rule, well, you could be penalized for that. So you could be penalized for trying to look after your own health. And again, this is something that is not very practical whatsoever. You know, it's, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's even criminal. But according to the politicians, they're the ones that are pushing it. So when they push something, it's totally legal. All right, let me read the last bit of this article here. So what is posed as a revival of Britain's green and pleasant land is in fact a coercive drive to put motorists on a leash. Those homes with a car will have to count how many times they use it to cross town. There will be permits, penalties, and almost certainly more ubiquitous surveillance. All of this just so that Oxford officialdom, which has declared a climate emergency, can claim to be achieving the council's net zero carbon Oxford vision by 2040. Not for the first time, or indeed the last, the net zero agenda seems to have taken far too much inspiration from those illiberal days of lockdown. And that is so, so true. Now, I'm going to talk about the lockdowns for 1 second. I don't want to get too much into it. And now here's my theory about it. Okay, I think the lockdowns were a testing ground to see how people would react to the fact of them being isolated. Now, for the first part, they were very successful because, you know, people actually did take the virus seriously. It was very unknown. People didn't know what was going on, and all they could rely on was bullshit media to tell them that this virus was very dangerous. So again, I believe this was an experiment as far as I'm concerned, and they were seeing how people would react. Now, for the most part, it failed miserably because people don't want to be contained. Okay, I remember seeing people shouting and yelling from their balconies from condo buildings in Italy. Just recently, in the last 4 or 5 months, China, there was a protest where people, again, they were going to their balconies and they were yelling, you know, they were yelling out that they wanted to be free, basically. And overall, I just think that experiment just failed miserably. And it's great that people resisted. And now, they're still talking about how they want to introduce these environmental lockdowns, and they're trying their hardest to find a way to do it. And believe me, they're not going to succeed. Okay, because I just think that people have had enough of this, these lockdown measures. Okay. Now I want to talk about something else in regards to these lockdowns. And the ubiquitous, like the writer was stating, ubiquitous surveillance. Now, I know in China they have this sort of digital system where everybody has a cell phone. Actually, I think everybody has to have a cell phone as part of the digital system. And every time you are sick, you have to take your temperature. And if your temperature is too high, then you're not permitted to leave your house or your condo. So therefore, your condo or house could potentially be a prison. Now, I could see the same thing happening here. Of course, the 15-minute city is going to be, it's going to be followed by a digital ID system. Everybody's going to have cell phones. And they're basically, the state is going to basically decide whether you can leave your home or not. Now, I'm going to use this as an example, and this is something that you guys should really think about. In China, there was a bail-in from their banks. They took a certain amount of money out of people's accounts. Naturally, the people were upset, and they wanted to go out in the streets to protest about it. But when they wanted to leave, all of a sudden their phones flash red or something, an indicator or some sort of app that they have basically signified them that they could not leave the apartment. Now, how convenient is that? Okay, is that a coincidence? I'm thinking it's not. I'm thinking that the Chinese government knew that the people of China were going to be irate. Now, it didn't happen across China. It just happened in certain areas of China. But they knew that these people were going to be pissed off and that they were going to basically protest to show their anger. And I mean, again, what a coincidence, isn't it, that all of a sudden they weren't permitted to leave their condos. Now, I'm mentioning this because, again, this is something that can totally happen under this 15-minute city model. You know, with the digital cash, digital ID system, we can basically live in these open air jail systems like the Palestinian people are living right now in Palestine. So it's something to think about. It's something to think about. It's something definitely we shouldn't support. And again, if it's coming from your government, then you know it's something that you need to question. All right, guys, I appreciate you guys listening to tonight's podcast. I just want to mention that we are available on three platforms. The first one is Anchor FM, which is our podcast platform. We're also on YouTube, and we're also on Rumble. When you guys get a chance, please check it out. Anyways, guys, it was a pleasure doing this podcast. Hopefully the audio turns out well. And again, guys, until next time, talk to you guys later. See ya.